Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. So sit back with your cup of coffee, your Danish, your muffin, your yogurt, or whatever healthy that you're eating, and listen in, and we'll talk about topics of interest to you in tax, estate planning, business planning. But first, Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin Feldman and Pittleman, always at your side, and moving to Reston, Virginia from Fairfax for the first time in 40 years. More about that in future shows, but we'll be there on August the 27th of 2012, and we hope that you'll come visit us. If you're our clients or if you'd like to know more about the firm, please call us at 703-218-2100 or visit us on the web, where we'll be telling you more about the move and some of the exciting new things that are going on with the firm at ofplaw.com. If you'd like to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, please do so, because you'll be able to receive updates on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. When videos are posted, audio information, of course, all the radio shows are posted to Blueprint for Wealth. You can listen to all the old Blueprint for Wealth shows there. And Blueprint for Wealth is also a column in the Washington Business Journal, which I write on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest every month in the journal. Today, as I usually do, I go back and forth. I'll do a business planning show. I'll do an estate planning show. Today, we're going to talk about an estate planning topic of interest. It is strategies, gifting and lifetime transfer strategies, in light of the fact that the tax law is expected to expire, at least on the estate tax side, on December the 31st of 2012. To rehash an old topic, each of us has a $5,120,000 exemption this year. If we died this year, that's how much would escape estate tax. If we had assets in excess of that amount, we would be subject to a flat tax of 35%. If you have a married couple, that really amounts to $10.24 million of assets that can escape estate tax. It's very, very favorable. On January 1st of 2013, everything's scheduled to unwind. The exemptions are scheduled to go back to $1 million per person, and the estate tax rates are going to rise as high as 55%. There's a generation skipping transfer tax that's imposed, and the exemption drops from $5.12 million down to about $1.4 million. So it's a radical change that is occurring on January the 1st, unless Congress does something. So the key question is, should we be considering lifetime transfers to take advantage of the gifting opportunities that were afforded by the extension of the Bush tax cuts back in 2010? Now, that's going to depend on a bunch of factors, including your net worth, your predisposition to making gifts regardless of the tax laws, the extent to which you've got discretionary assets or funds with which to make those gifts. In other words, you're not making gifts out of funds that you need to live on. And the tax basis, the volatility, and other characteristics of assets that you may consider gifting or retaining. Now, I'm going to assume, for purposes of this show today, that you want to make substantial gifts. In the past, the tax laws, especially prior to 2011's $1 million lifetime federal gift tax exemption, 2013 rather, $1 million lifetime federal gift tax exemption, imposed many constraints on how an individual was willing or able to give away their assets. With the $5.12 million gift and GST, generation skipping tax exemption, that we have available this year, the focus is less on the transfer tax issues and more on how the individual really wants to give away the assets. The starting point is what you have as discretionary assets, meaning, are they really available for gifting? Do you not need them to live on, even if you're age 120? What are discretionary assets? There's no size that fits all. My recommendation to you is that you need to sit down with a financial planner, a certified financial planner, who can estimate based on your spending habits, your goals, your objectives, personal and business, what you will need to live the rest of your life. There's no science as much as it is an art associated with this exercise. But to figure out what you have available to make as gifts, you have to really know what is discretionary. Now, there are some techniques that are available to expand your definition of what you might view as discretionary. For example, we've created what are called spousal lifetime access trusts. You can make a gift to a trust under which your spouse, your husband or your wife, is one of several beneficiaries. Your kids might be included, or may be the only permissible beneficiary for the balance of the spouse's life. The possibility of making distributions to your spouse may make the individual more comfortable with the idea of making a large gift to such a trust, but there are several drawbacks. First of all, the spouse could die, meaning that if you've transferred assets out of your estate to take advantage of some of the transfer tax benefits associated with it, and the spouse dies, then you may not have access to those assets. The second potential drawback is that you could get divorced, and by creating one of these trusts, you've created an irrevocable trust, which may not be subject to change following the transfer of the asset into the trust. And the third consideration is taxes. If the spouse is a beneficiary of a trust to which you make a substantial gift, then you cannot make what's called a gift splitting election. The two spouses can't elect to take one half of the gift on their tax returns. So only the $5.12 million lifetime federal gift tax exemption and not the entire $10.24 million joint exemption is available for such a gift. You and your spouse might even be tempted to set up two trusts. You'll set up one for your wife or your husband, and your spouse will set up one for you. In addition to the trust that the individual establishes, you've created a reciprocal trust. There are very, very significant consequences that you need to be aware of, and you need to plan accordingly to avoid negative tax consequences. Two traps that I want you to consider in particular. The first is the so-called reciprocal trust doctrine. That's where an individual is deemed to have established a trust for his or her own benefit instead of the spouse's benefit, which causes the assets to be included in his or her gross estate for estate tax purposes. That's a bad result. Now, you can mitigate this result or make it less likely by doing two things. One is, if you're going to set up the trusts at the same time, make them very different. In other words, the trust that you set up for your spouse may have different beneficiaries from the trust that he or she sets up for you. That's one significant difference. But there are many differences that need to be taken into consideration so that the IRS won't challenge it and cause the assets to be included in your respective estates. Another consideration in avoiding this reciprocal trust taint is to perhaps create the trusts at different times. So you might create a trust for your spouse today, and he might create a trust for you next year. If you have that luxury of time, that'll help avoid the reciprocal trust taint. Another possible risk under tax law is the so-called step transaction doctrine. This will happen if, for example, you have all the assets and you transfer these assets to your spouse, who then turns around and transfers those assets to a trust for your benefit. The IRS may use this step transaction doctrine to say, hey, these assets came from you, and so they really should be considered your assets and drawn back into your estate. So you need to be careful for that, of the step transaction doctrine. You can also set up a trust with an independent trustee and give that trustee the power to make discretionary distributions to you from the trust. Now, this type of structure may be utilized in states that are recognizing self-settled asset protection trusts. States like Delaware, Alaska, Nevada, South Dakota, Rhode Island, and most recently, Virginia set up a self-settled asset protection trust statute in April of 2012. You've got to be careful that there's no pre-arrangement that the independent trustee is obligated to make distributions to you, or regular and recurring distributions. Those types of distributions might be regarded as a pre-arrangement that would cause the whole thing to be unwound. As a result, you, as the creator of the trust, at most will view this trust as a possible emergency fund that you have to turn to later on, but not that you're going to live on. So it's truly discretionary funds that you don't need to use right away. The last idea is to create what we call a preferred limited liability company. In effect, this will shift annual cash flow from the assets that you might contribute to the LLC in exchange for a preferred interest that allows you to make sure that you get a certain return on your investment from those assets every year before any other owner does. At the same time, you have the power to transfer the common interest, a lesser interest, to your kids or a trust for the benefit of your kids. These techniques are ways of taking advantage of the transfer lifetime exemptions that we have available in 2012, which may survive. The benefits will survive beyond 2012, but we may not be able to use those techniques as effectively in 2013 and beyond. If you've got questions about it, give us a call at 703-218-2100.